Another June Monday is upon us. Another busy stretch for the Buckeyes on the way. And by the time we get to the end of the week, another off-season week will be out of the way. Welcome back to The Beat. That is Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward. Hope everybody had a wonderful Father's Day weekend. I am sure that we did. 100%. But I don't 100% sure that we did. As soon as camp season started, Berm, it feels like it's almost already over. Like it's winding down this week. How can that be?
Yeah, I don't know. And actually, the way that the schedule is set up, like Ohio State just wrapped up 10 official visitors on Sunday afternoon. This coming weekend, there'll be double digits, probably a dozen or more. We'll have full numbers on that as we get closer to the end of the week. But then they're done. Then they're done with official visits. And then all of the coaches will scatter and go to different sides of the earth and different nether regions of the planet that no one can find them or bother them. And then 3 weeks later, they'll emerge like a groundhog in February, but this time it'll be in Las Vegas and then it's football season. So I don't know. I don't know where the time is going. I don't like the fact that it's going so fast, but it is a regular and constant reminder that we're all going to die soon.
Oh, well, we're off and running on a Monday. That wasn't where I thought we were going to take it, hey. But here we are.
Hey, time waits for no one. It's constantly ticking. We're all going to die.
Yeah. Okay. That's a very uplifting start to your Monday. Hope everybody sticks around and hope it can get more positive as we move forward.
I'm not saying they're going to die today or we're going to die today, but I think it's important that we acknowledge that we're all going to die.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
Well, Ohio State football is going to outlive us all. I think we know that. That's true. It's recession proof. It's indestructible. And for the week ahead for them, we are efforting to finalize a time to get more insight and more conversation with Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjork. There are the camps that I mentioned. What, you got 2 7-on-7s or 3?
Well, we got a 7-on-7 Monday morning. We have the final 1 day recruiting camp on Tuesday, then a 7-on-7 on Wednesday. Thursday is the commitment date of Sincere Johnson, the 4-star linebacker from Cleveland Glenville, who just wrapped up his official visit to Ohio State. Barring something phenomenal happening, we expect that he'll pick Ohio State over Alabama on Thursday. And then you get into the biggest recruiting weekend of the year. So not a lot of slowdown, but it is, at least there is a light at the end of the tunnel for Ohio State. And that light is not a train.
That's very important. Yeah, it's not the kind of light you want to see. There's also a chance, possibly even a good chance, that we will be hearing on the record from some current Buckeyes Tuesday or Wednesday, maybe Wednesday, which I think would really spice it up and give us a lot of stuff here as June.
Oh, well, I don't know what you're talking about there, but I'll just take your word.
You can take my word for it. I got that part handled. You handle the recruiting stuff, and then everything will be copacetic, man. So all of that to say, a busy week upcoming, but the thing I couldn't get out of my mind was the future, way into the future. Some things that Ross Bjork said, and I touched on it briefly on Thursday on Snap Judgments, and he kind of just, you know, snuck in this jab at the SEC. It didn't feel to me like it was bragging. It didn't feel like it was a threat to the SEC or even to Tony Petitti, but it was in relation to the college football expansion talk. And then that leads itself directly into how Ohio State is going to schedule and manage the non-conference for the future. And I got a little bit concerned, a little bit excited, not fully sure what Ohio State intends to do, because the last action that they took was to make the 2029 non-conference schedule maybe one of the worst that I've ever seen from Ohio State. So I'm curious, Berm, what you make of it, if you thought that there was a shift in strategy, and some of it is still largely contingent on what the Big Ten and SEC decide to do with the college football playoff, and I understand all that, but I don't know that this is trending in a way that is necessarily good for college football, even if it is the right business choice.
Yeah, I think Ross Bjork attempted on Thursday of last week to thread the needle a little bit and say, hey, we're willing to play these big games if it comes down to it. But if you look at the future schedules, it's pretty clear that the 2029 approach was not like an aberration. Like, this is probably the direction it's going. We talked about the 2029 schedule 2 weeks ago. That's Navy, Charlotte, and Youngstown State that season for Ohio State in the non-conference. It's not a whole lot better in 28 or 27. The only difference is that Ohio State has Alabama currently on the schedule in 27 and 28. But our expectation is that those games probably don't get played. And I would think that the home and home with Texas that's beginning in August will be the last of these big marquee matchups for Ohio State in the non-conference schedule, at least until there's some sort of continuity throughout the sport and some sort of consistency to say, hey, Ohio State's going to play nine conference games. So is Alabama. So is Georgia. Or as, you know, to your dream of the 12-team conference schedule, which I personally, I mean, I don't disagree with. I understand some people may think it's boring or whatever, but as you look ahead for Ohio State,
but how could it, well, how could it be boring? I don't understand that argument.
You know, because if you play 12 conference games, there the chances of you playing Rutgers and Illinois and Indiana and Purdue every year go up. And right now, like one of the things that keeps the Ohio State schedule somewhat fresh is that we don't know what their Big Ten slate is going to look like every year. But you know, if you look ahead for Ohio State, if there's not automatic qualifiers, for example, let's go to the 27 Ohio State football schedule or even 26. I mean, you've got Kent State and Ball State as your non-conference home games to start the season with a trip to Texas, right? So whatever. But then okay, Ohio State.
But even if you replace them with Rutgers and Maryland,
yeah,
like that's working towards a goal.
It's certainly better than Kent State and Ball State as far as the product that the fans are going to see, but as how it relates to the Ohio State record and getting into the playoffs and all that stuff. You know, every time you add a Big Ten opponent, whether or not they're a team you've beaten 30 out of the last 30 tries, there is at least a better chance that you're going to lose than Kent State or Ball State. But Ohio State in 2026 will play at Texas. They have to play Michigan, Oregon, Iowa, Nebraska, USC. In 27, it's USC, Oregon, Michigan, Penn State. Like, the schedule, the Big Ten expanded to 18 teams, and it got a lot better. Like, there's no reason that you should have to fill in this, you know, the schedule used to be filled in with these teams because A, it was really good for TV. B, it's really good for the fans. And C, you weren't going to play these games otherwise. But now because of the playoff, you're going to play Alabama and Georgia and Texas every year at some point. So why do you need to schedule them at the start?
Yeah. And so this, you make a good point. If you play 12 conference games, then that's a lot more losses that go into your league, which is why Ross Bjork said this on Thursday, which I think is important. He said, you really need to understand what the college football playoff format looks like. Do we keep those games if there's a different model that really doesn't fit playing those kind of games? If it's all about just being 12-0 or 11-1, then maybe we shouldn't play those games. So I think you have to put everything on the table. And under this model and the way that they're talking about these proposals, it's hard to make a case, especially if they go to 5-11 or the way it was last year and we saw what happened. With the 12 teams, and that's not going to last. The 12 team era was here today and was gone tomorrow. So barely had a chance to celebrate that era.
Didn't stop them Buckeyes from winning it all, though.
That's right. But there was a selection committee that was again involved, and I know that they have a difficult job, but they get it wrong just as much as they get it right with some of these teams. And you look at those rankings, it's hard to argue that. You don't know what the criteria is, and the strength of schedule piece keeps coming into this. So I'm not trying to have this both ways. I don't love the idea of four automatic qualifying spots for the Big Ten and four for the SEC. I don't think that is in the greater interest of college football, but I may have to accept it because I think that's probably the best path forward to get what I want, which is every game counting during the regular season. And if non-conference games continue to exist, they won't factor in to a four-team automatic Big Ten bid situation. These games won't matter at all. You don't need to play SEC teams. You don't need to play anybody. So like those, I think you could just schedule yourself the nine Big Ten games and take the rest of the week as training camp. Like that would be, who would say that you couldn't do that if that's the only way forward? But
let me ask you this.
Okay.
Let me ask you this. What's worse, the four AQs for the Big Ten and the SEC or the 5-11? Because I think the 5-11 is significantly worse because I think then you leave things up to people more than you do in the, if eight teams are automatic and we know that the top four in the Big Ten and SEC, then the odds of them screwing up the remaining eight are less. I think I like Ross Bjork's idea about play-in games as opposed to an AQ. I mean, those are AQs, but like, it's not necessarily just based on the strength of your record. But to me, the other option here, because we know this is going to go to 14 or 16, hopefully 16, the five automatic qualifiers are the champions and then 11 at largest, I think is just a nightmare. It was a nightmare this year, and all they had to do was pick seven, and it was terrible.
Yeah. Well, it gives too much remaining power to a college football playoff selection committee, and they don't deserve it for a multitude of
people.
Yeah, that I've talked about a lot. For longtime listeners, they've heard me talk about the selection committee a lot and criticize the way that that process is handled. And Ross Bjork did that a couple times subtly on Thursday as well. So yeah, I don't love that. The part that I have the issue with the automatic qualifiers is continuing to play games that are of no consequence whatsoever, which these non-conference games under that model, there have been no conversations for my dream of 12. There have been no conversations actually that I'm aware of to go to 10 Big Ten games, which I think all of that needs to happen. That you just, especially in a world where you go to the four automatic qualifying spots and you have play-in games that include the top six, if you're only playing nine games and you're seeing half of the league, then we're going to see truly crazy town banana pants tiebreakers being used to determine the six and seven spot for who could be playing to get into the college football playoff. So that stuff has to be resolved, in my opinion. I think
that's why I get rid of the conference championship weekend. That turns into your playoff weekend. You get one through eight in the Big Ten. If you're in the top eight in the Big Ten, you're playing for a spot in the playoff, and you play that week instead. So it's 1 versus 8. 2. Like last year, Ohio State would have had to beat Illinois in a play-in game to get into the playoff because they were the fourth ranked team in the Big Ten when the schedule was all said and done. So I think that there's ways they can get creative that keep intrigue, because no one really gives a flying crap about the bottom 10 of the Big Ten. But that top eight, there's some good teams in there. And if you think about a season like this one upcoming, like I think that there's some really intriguing potential matchups if you view it that way, as a way of keeping the championship weekend entertaining and interesting and financially a boon to the conference. And then you add the automatic qualifiers plus the play-ins. I think you can have them all. You can have it all.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many times we heard Ross Bjork call it content on Thursday. You know, the other word we hear is inventory for the broadcasters. And my idea also gives them more of that. And I'm way more frustrated by the SEC's unwillingness to just go to nine, because that's holding up a lot of the other process and a lot of the other decision-making factors that go into the future of the college football playoff and the future of these schedules. Like, what choice did Ohio State have for 2029? They have to assume that the SEC is not going to play ball, that they are going to continue to advocate for what would give them the most possible spots in the playoff. I go back and forth on the 4-4-2-2-1 and the 5-11 because of what you're talking about. I don't like the selection committee. I also don't like just telling, which there could be years in the future where the ACC is suddenly good enough to have three teams in it, or the Big 12 could be good enough. And there may be years that the Big 10 has seven teams that are good enough. So,
But they're not stopped from adding more teams. There's the minimum of requirement. And if we went back, and we certainly haven't done this for this show, but I think if we went through the last 20 years of college football, it would be pretty easy to create a 16-team playoff that included four Big Ten teams and four SEC teams every year. And I think you'd struggle to find a year where that was a regular additional team from the ACC or Big 12.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how we're categorizing Oklahoma and Texas at that given moment, but you're right. I mean, well, what do you want, Berm? Everybody who has watched us over the last few years knows what I want. What do you want the schedule to look like?
I want nine conference games. I want continued games against the MAC inside of
Ohio. Let me just ask, why not 10?
Okay, give me 10. Fine. Okay. 10's easy. I think nine because it's an uneven number, and then you hopefully avoid some of the tiebreaker stuff that comes from even numbers, but it's irrelevant.
The uneven part is what really gets me, though. Beyond just being unwieldy, it's five conference road games and four conference home games, like alternating back and forth. That's ridiculous. I don't understand why teams have to play at a disadvantage within their own league.
Yeah, it seems unnecessary. So give me 10 and give me two. I think there is still a ton of value. Even when college football divides itself and goes to the four super conferences and the other 64 group of fours or whatever they're going to be called. And we, again, I'm pretty sure that's coming in our lifetime. But there's still value in playing Toledo or Ohio. Number one, with the transfer portal, this is an opportunity to scout people. Number two, it helps grow football in and around the state of Ohio, around the MAC, where they need help, especially if they're no longer a Power Five or a autonomous four, or whatever the hell they're called moving forward. So give me two. I don't mind playing. No, as I said last week, never play an FCS school. That's ridiculous. That's patently absurd. But Ohio State should have Youngstown State or New Hampshire and all these other schools on their schedule in the next few years. So that's really it to me. I mean, there's no reason, to your point, that you should be playing an uneven number of home and road games every year. That's flat out stupid. You should never be playing the school back-to-back years on their home turf. Like, that should never happen. All these things that have occurred in the last few years are just because they were like, well, we have to figure out a way to make these teams play. Like, just play five at home, five on the road, and then Ohio State will play two home games against other schools. And ideally, sure, for the fans' purposes, I think it'd be great to have Alabama and Georgia and Texas are coming into the shoe. But again, the playoffs exist now, so you're going to play them there. And there shouldn't be buys in the playoff, in my opinion. So you know, everyone's going to have four games. So,
well, at least I got you to 10 Big Ten games. That's a start for me. Ross Bjork said this about Alabama, Georgia, and Texas specifically, all of those home and homes that are on the books right now. And this was Ohio State's perspective as of this moment. He said, right now, we're keeping them. We'll embrace it. We'll go play, and they have to do the same thing. They've got to play us too. So I think it's too early to tell what the future is. I feel like Ohio State will not cancel those games, but I have said before, and I will reiterate again, I don't believe they will be played. Maybe that's just optimism that the SEC is going to do the right thing and go to 9 conference games, but the second that they do, Alabama and Georgia will be axing this series. I don't think the Texas series is underway. We're, 2.5 months away from that game kicking off in the horseshoe. That one's going to get done. But Alabama and Georgia, I do not believe, will play those games.
Yeah, and it'd be pretty unexpected if Texas allowed Ohio State to back out of the 26th game after playing at Ohio Stadium this year. So, whatever. It sucks for the fan. That's really the thing that I hope that college football and the powers that be are thinking of ways, if we're going to lose these types of matchups in the beginning of the season, let's make sure that the New Hampshires of the world are not on the schedule anymore. Like, even if it's a MAC school, Toledo can come to town and give you a game if you catch them on the right day or the wrong day. I think that's just much better for everyone in the big picture. I just don't, because last year is a prime example of how it worked. Like, I said, I had to play Tennessee and Oregon for a second time, and then Texas, and then Notre Dame. Like, if you combine that as a postseason schedule with having to play Michigan and USC and Nebraska and Illinois and Penn State, like, the schedule's plenty hard. You don't have to make it harder in the beginning of the year, but you can still make it interesting without making it laughable and giving SEC exposed or whatever those sites are reasons to mock your league.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think that's the benefit of the 18 team league as well, is that some of those teams are Rutgers with all.
Let me posit this to you. Now that we're in agreement that these games are going away, they're going to be going the way of the dodo. Mm-hmm. In the dozen years or longer that we've been covering Ohio State now, going on 15 years, actually.
Yeah.
Remember
what you said about time marching on?
Yeah. Is there a home and home that you're most disappointed has never occurred between Ohio State and a team around the country that we didn't get a chance to go see the Buckeye brand in their stadium?
Yeah, I always used to answer this by saying Tennessee, and now we've seen half of it. I still would very much like to see the Horseshoe South experience. As much as Tennessee was beating their chest about bringing people up for a playoff game, and their fans are as passionate as they come, there are a lot of similarities, and I said this before the playoff, between these two fan bases that I've had the pleasure, or sometimes displeasure, depending on where I lived, of dealing with on a day-to-day basis. No offense, Tennessee fans, I'm talking to you. But those are two of the most venerable historic venues that exist in college football, and seeing Ohio State play there, I think would have been awesome. I actually loved covering games at Neyland Stadium and living in Knoxville, if that beat hadn't been such a personal grind, you know, cool. I would have stayed there longer, but then I would have missed out on how much I love Columbus. So I'm glad I'm not there. But that's a home and home that made a ton of sense. Would have loved to have seen that go through. Don't have to talk about like Washington or Oregon because those are now within reach and are going to be pretty fairly regular occurrences. Same for USC and UCLA. The Texas one is going to be pretty cool. I've never covered a game in Austin, although I've been there many times. But when you throw all those out there, I feel like it's Tennessee, and it's easy to get there.
Yeah. To me, it's Florida and Texas A&M. I think that those are two spots I would just love to see an Ohio State crowd, because I think back to the Oregon game last year and like there's the holy Moses moment of like, wow, this is different. And Florida, I know they've been up and down, but I would have figured with Urban Meyer's history, with everything there, that sometime in the last 20 plus years that those two teams would have figured out a way to like just go head to head. And then Texas A&M, every time I watch an Aggies game, I see the 12th man stuff on and it's just crazy. And I would really like to watch a game.
Yeah, that would have been fun too. All right, that's schedule stuff. I said there was more recruiting conversation in the pipeline. Sure. Berm is planning on a little talking stuff additionally this week to break down everything else that's happened over the weekend and heading into the final week of official visitors in camp season. But Ohio State did not wait around for that. So on Friday, heading into the weekend, actually, they picked up a commitment for the 2028 class, which
is insane.
How can that be a real year? That's not real.
I don't know. So for the uninitiated, a 2028 prospect means that he just wrapped up his freshman year of high school. The photo that you see if you're watching this on YouTube or 10TV or 10TV Plus is Elijah Newman Hall. He's a 2028, so he's a young man who just finished his freshman year of high school at Tampa's Blake High School. He's 15 years old.
No, that guy's 23 years old.
That guy is 15 years old, which is nuts. And because he just finished his high school freshman's year, he's not ranked or anything like that yet because no networks have their 2028 rankings out. But just anecdotally, on Tuesday of last week when he camped at Ohio State, Elijah Newman Hall, as he is 6 foot tall, 200 and plus pounds, as a 15-year-old who ran for roughly 900 yards as a freshman, was walking by, and myself and some of my recruiting peers in the industry were looking to try to figure out who he was, because at Ohio State camps they don't have names or numbers or anything. And he walked by, and right behind him, a man who was attached to his hip nearly the entire day when he was in town said, "That is the top target in that class, period." So he said, "Just so you know, that's the guy. That's the top target in the 2028 class." So he got a lot more attention on Tuesday at camp from the media than he would have otherwise, I think, because of that anecdote.
The introduction.
And then he went out there and just blew people away. And again, 6 foot tall, 200 pounds, 15 years old, lifelong Floridian, not a kid who has ties to the Midwest, but he made that visit. Ohio State had offered him prior to the trip. He had been basically told, "Hey, you are our guy," as we were told. And the Buckeyes knocked it out of the park. He got a lot of time with Ryan Day last week. He said him and his mom got a chance to sit down and talk to him, and talking about his mother's background from Jamaica and Ryan Day finding a way to connect to her about how he loved Jamaica. I don't know. And just then 3 days after he gets home on Friday morning, it commits to Ohio State without any fanfare. And people are going to overlook this probably as they should, if we're being honest. Okay. Like it's a 2028. There's 3 years left of high school for this young man. He's from Florida. Anything can happen. Carlos Lachlan could find a job somewhere else. There's so many moving parts, but it is a testament to what Ohio State actually does on these visits, because the way that they connect with kids, even in a 10-hour visit from Florida for this young man and his mother, is really special. They pull out the red carpet for every kid that's in town. And here you go. You have a Travion Henderson-esque top one or two running backs in the country in his class. He's unequivocally going to be a top one or two running back in his class. And now Carlos Lachlan can focus on finding another 26 and a 27 running back, because 28 is locked in at this point, which is amazing. Again, insane. The Buckeyes also offered a 2029 quarterback last week on Thursday, which is also nuts, a kid from Tennessee. So that means he's entering his freshman year of high school in 2 months. The last one of those we saw, a quarterback who got offered before his freshman year of high school, was Quinn Ewers. So that's something to pay attention to if we're looking down the line. That kid's name is Ty Snell. He is from Nashville. So there's a, you know, when we start to look ahead, who are the perfect prospects? Like, if you're getting an offer from Ohio State as a quarterback before you're a freshman in high school, that's a pretty good sign.
Not this again with the perfect prospects.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the last two guys we've seen offered before they entered high school were Quinn Ewers and Chris Henry Jr. So it's two pretty good players. Quinn obviously did not pan out in college the way people would have thought, but that's because he transferred out of Ohio State.
He cost Henry, you a lot of money that you still haven't paid me.
Hypothetical money.
Hypothetical money. Is that what you say when you open up your sports book apps and you're like, this is just hypothetical money? I'm not actually.
Yeah, because there is nothing in there. Because there is nothing in there. So.
Oh, good. All right.
But it's an interesting time for Ohio State, certainly. On the recruiting trail, big weekend. So we'll dive into that more on talking stuff probably Monday night as we sit down at the Woody after the 7-on-7 events are over on Monday afternoon. But lots of big stuff coming because the class is cooking. The Buckeyes are the number 3 class in the country in 26 and now have their first 2028 commit.
So big recruiting week, big opportunity again. One more to be around those Buckeyes working out on Tuesday. And then the opportunity potentially to talk to some of the veterans, returning players. We'll see who all could make that list. It's tentatively scheduled for Wednesday. I hope it happens. It would be a great time to get some actual on-the-record updates from these guys and hear from them about how their summers are going, how spring went for some of them. We haven't talked to, I guess it's been since actually before the spring game, since we've had any of those conversations and press conferences with the Buckeyes. And then we're trying to finalize a time to sit down to get a little bit more on the athletic department side with Ross Bjork. So we're staying busy. So are the Buckeyes. We got full content coming your way every single day on The Fan, 10 TV, 10 TV Plus, and every audio platform where you get podcasts. We appreciate you guys following along with us. We'll be back to talk to you later on Monday. For Berm, I am Austin. This has been the Austin and Berm Show. It's The Beat. So long.